97.5, The Fanatic.
Saturday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy, and welcome into 97.5 The Fanatic. The number, as always, to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. I'm Tyler Zulli. We're back. We are broadcasting live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. We're here until 3 o'clock today. It is great to be back with you on a beautiful Saturday afternoon across the Delaware Valley. We are with our good friend Tom Alvord today. He's back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios, producing, co-hosting, doing everything that we need to do to keep this show up and running. So we appreciate Tom, and we'll hear from Tom in just a moment's time. We have a ton to get into and a three-hour run to do so, so why don't we jump right into things. A realization hit me last night. It's not a new thought. It's not anything that is earth-shattering or mind-blowing or life-altering or any of those kind of descriptors to describe that this thought that I had, but a thought hit me last night that could change the course of the Phillies season for the better. A thought hit me last night that might be just stupid enough for it to work, and might be so simplistic that we're to the point that we've overthought it, or we haven't thought of it in quite some time. The Phillies season's season odds, the end of the season, into the playoffs, whatever the postseason may lie, gets substantially easier, gets substantially more clear. The clarity becomes substantially more potent with Nick Castellanos hitting the baseball. So simple. It's right in front of our faces. And yet, because of the fact that it's been a down year for Nick Castellanos, and it has been a down year for Nick Castellanos, no doubt about it, and because of the fact that we have given Nick Castellanos flack for the underperformance that he's had over the course of the first 100-plus games of the season, and rightfully so, because he has been underwhelming, especially considering the amount of money that he is making in each individual season. But it dawned on me last night, after watching Nick Castellanos much more closely over the last couple of weeks, trying to decide, not that I'm a professional hitter nor a professional hitting coach, but trying to decide in my humble baseball opinion what was going on with Nick Castellanos, why the plate approach was so poor, and why the at-bats looked so off, it dawned on me that a Nick Castellanos, even a slight turnaround, makes this baseball team better, makes this playoff push easier, and perhaps changes the course of what is expected or what is meant to be. Let me give you some numbers on Nick Castellanos recently. In his last 17 at-bats, he has 7 hits. In his last 31 at-bats, he has 12 hits. Those are good for a 412 average and a 387 average. Now, I know that those are very, very small sample sizes. I am aware that over the course of a season, 17 or 31 at-bats is minuscule compared to the 500, 600, even maybe 700 plate appearances that a player may garner over the course of a season. But the things that I'm watching from Nick Castellanos transcend him hitting the ball well and his batting average rising over the last 31 at-bats. At times, the plate approach has been much cleaner. The whiff rate's gone down. It's still way too high. It's still at almost 33%. It is still obnoxiously high. I'm not going to take anything away from that. But it's gone down. His strikeout rate is down to 23.6%, which does seem high on the surface, but then you realize that over the course of his career, it's a 23.1, talking about a half percentage difference. His strikeout rate in the last 31 at-bats is just 12.9%, which is really, really good. We start to dive into some of the analytical stuff, and his barrel rate has gone up, and it's actually the league average now. And again, much like the strikeout rate being too high, league average is not good enough for a guy making the kind of money that he's making and a guy that has the expectations that he has on his shoulders. But in this small sample size, in this small set that I've noticed, Nick Castellanos has been a better hitter over the last 31 at-bats, which translates to roughly 7 to 8 games. it's a week. It's, two, you know, 10 days. It is a small sample size. I do not deny you that. But what I've seen from him over the last 10 days or so has been a much better plate approach, has been a more consistent plate approach, and quite frankly, it's been a more casual plate approach. And I don't mean that he's going up there haphazardly. I mean he's more comfortable at the plate, which leads to more free flow. And we all know that when you're free flowing and you're comfortable and you're up at the plate, I don't want to say loose, but feeling loose and feeling right, good things happen. Take away the strikeouts for a second. The 33%, as I said, is way too high. You want to dive deeper into the analytic numbers? His BABIP this year is 319, which means if you take his strikeouts aside, the balls that he has put in play, when he is hitting the baseball, he's hitting at a 319 clip. Now, I'm using these numbers to my advantage. I'm using these numbers to push my narrative forward, and I totally take responsibility for that. There's no question about that. But it seems like such a simplistic thought process and such a simplistic answer to how to better the Phillies. They've been great. Over the month of June, they had a 61% winning percentage. Or excuse me, the month of July, they had a 61% winning percentage. They are taking care of business, seemingly, against, other than that sample size against the Cubs, they are taking care of business, winning a series against the Pirates, already at worst splitting the series against the Nationals with an opportunity to win the series tonight, split a two-game set with the Atlanta Braves. They are doing what they are supposed to be doing. So now we start to look ahead a little bit. Not to go too far ahead, and we're going to do that later in the show, but we start to look ahead a little bit and figure out the bigger picture and figure out how this team gets even better. They're not perfect. I've said this before. There's only about two perfect teams in baseball, and that may be stretching it. But the things that they can control, the things that are within their own scope, give me confidence with them moving forward. As we said on Tuesday, after the trade deadline, they got better. As I said on Wednesday, they're now better than the Milwaukee Brewers and the St. Louis Cardinals. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe, as I've attested for the entirety of the summer, that this is a playoff team. So you take the next step. How do you continue to get better? One of those things is within your control. One of those things is right in your own backyard. And that's an improved statistical and approach at the plate from Nick Castellanos. And over the last 31 at-bats, you've gotten that. Nick Castellanos being consistent, and I'm not asking for the last year's Reds Nick Castellanos. I understand that it would take divine intervention at this point for that to happen. I'm asking for a serviceable Nick Castellanos. I'm asking for a Nick Castellanos that provides you at-bats that you feel comfortable with. I'm asking for a guy that you're paying over $20 million a year for to drive runs in with runners in scoring position and not hit into egregious double plays with runners in scoring position and nobody out. I'm asking for a guy to bring you consistency down the rest of the stretch. And what I've seen in the last 31 at-bats is telling me that I feel like he's getting closer and closer and closer to that form. It's so simplistic and it's so right under our nose that I feel like we are overlooking it because of that fact, and because he did struggle mightily at the beginning of the season into the month of, you know, the early portion of July. The Nick Castellanos you have seen over the last 2 weeks, if he maintains that, and maybe not that, because hitting 412 in your last 17 at-bats or hitting 387 in your last 31 at-bats seems unobtainable. But if he can hit 290 or 280 to 290 for the rest of the year, meaning the rest of the at-bats that he gets, 280 to 290, and he gets his batting average at the end of the season up to a mid-260s level, and he gets to, I don't know, maybe he gets to 20 home runs, 18 to 20 home runs. He starts driving the ball, gap-to-gap power comes back. I feel much more confident heading into a playoff series, and regardless of how I feel about either team, the team that I would assume that they're going to play would be the NL Central winner, and I feel that the Phillies are better than both of those teams. Regardless of how I feel about them, you can never stack the deck enough in your favor. And Nick Castellanos being consistent is a massive, massive stack of the deck in your favor. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. It seems so utterly simplistic because they're taking care of business. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They are obviously, we know this for you know, the better part of 2 months now, they are better under Rob Thompson than they ever could have dreamed to be under Joe Girardi. The bullpen has been sensational for the most part. Scratch the bullpen game, I throw that game away. The starting rotation, especially the top two, have been your anchors. Ranger Suarez has been sensational over the last 6 or 7 starts now. Kyle Gibson, like he pitched last night, has upside ability. You have a solid 5 in Noah Syndergaard. Everything you have that can be controllable, you're doing a darn good job of controlling. One of the last things that you need for success that you have the ability to control is Nick Castellanos. And the Nick Castellanos that I've seen over the last 10 days or so is the best version of Nick Castellanos that we've seen this season. And if he can be a semblance of that guy, like I said, I'm not asking for 387, but if he can be a semblance of that guy moving forward, I feel even better about the Phillies' playoff chances, at least in the first round. We can reevaluate from there. We can discuss the Mets and the Braves and the Padres and the Dodgers once you get past that first series and once you get into the playoffs more specifically. But I feel more confident than I ever have, or I would feel more confident than I ever have this season, getting Nick Castellanos going. And I feel like it's trending in the correct direction. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. That's where we'll begin today's show. Do you have any confidence? Do you feel more confident in Nick Castellanos moving forward after what you've seen over the last week to 2 weeks? Or is it just a strong week from a player that has struggled so far this year? And before we go any further, before we get into the rest of the show, we welcome our second member of today's program, our producer, our co-host, back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. That's Tom Alvord. Tom, first and foremost, a good Saturday to you. Hope you're doing well. Where are you on this Nick Castellanos situation? Because I am starting to feel that like he is turning a corner. Even if it's slightly turning a corner in a small sample size, it makes me more confident heading into the stretch run and heading into a potential playoff series.
Yeah. Well, first of all, good afternoon, Tyler. Hope you're doing well. Sounds like a great time over there at the Parks Racing Sportsbook.
Oh, we're working for the weekend.
Hey, look at that. How fast that?
As soon as the show started, it came on. I just immediately thought of Bob Cooney.
That's as you should. Absolutely. Doing very well. Thank you. I am very excited about this Phillies team. Man, Tyler, last night was fun, by the way. How much fun was it watching that game? That was batting practice. That was a home run derby. That is what the epitome of what this Phillies team should look like, and we thought they were going to look like going into this season. Everyone was hitting homers. Castellanos, did that ball land, Tyler? Because I don't think it did.
It's come down yet.
I have not seen a confident swing like that from Nick Castellanos almost the entire season. Like, he got a fastball right down the middle. It was a pitch missed by Josiah Gray. He missed his spot. But we've seen pitchers miss their spot a lot with Nick Castellanos this year. He just hasn't been able to take advantage of it. He saw it, his eyes lit up, and man, did he take advantage of it last night. To answer your question, I'm feeling really good about Nick Castellanos because, Tyler, for the first time this season, I think Nick Castellanos feels good about himself. I think he feels confident. I think he's got a little something going. I think he's got his swagger back, like to go from that meme that always circulates around Twitter, the Twitterverse,
great,
like that.
Great gift.
Great, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think he has his swagger back. I think now it is a short sample size, as you mentioned, 2-3 weeks or so of this kind of.
I mean, it's 31 at bats. It's not like it's a month. It's not like it's half a season. But you know, for the 31 at bats that you look at, where he was just totally almost. I hate to use the word inept, but it felt like the at bats were inept. The flailing in which
he was guessing up there.
Yeah, I mean, it was breaking balls down in a way. And I think I was looking at numbers. Jason Stark was giving us the numbers. His whiff rate was somewhere in the 40s. Now it's down to 40. Now it's down to 33%, which means he's not guessing as much. He's
progress.
Not flailing as much anymore. And when you do that, when you have the ability to not have to just be going up there like, you know, like in bench warmers where the guy goes up there with his plastic sword.
yes,
when you're not going up there like that, pitchers have to eventually come to you, right? Because we saw it over the course of a 3-4-5 week stretch where it was almost like end of Ryan Howard career-esque. I'm not going to throw you anything over the middle of the plate. If you want to go chase everything that I'm throwing you, be my guest. And that's what pitchers were doing to him. when you have when you start to be more selective and your bats start to turn around, pitchers don't have that luxury anymore because they know you're not going to chase, and eventually they're going to have to attack the zone, and that's when you attack them.
Got
to
start throwing them strikes, absolutely.
Right.
And I think, and listen, like, we've been getting on Nick Castellanos, us at the station, us here in Philadelphia, Phillies fans all over. We've been getting on him this entire season, as we should, because you signed a big contract, and you have not been living up to that contract until the past week or two. And especially with Bryce Harper being out, they needed someone to step up. Now, Rob Thompson, the Phillies, ended up, you know, having a good little route there and a good little stretch where, even though they didn't have Harper, they were able to win some games, win some series. But in the back of my mind, and as everyone was getting on Nick Castellanos, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, it feels a little too overreactionary. Now, not overreactionary in the sense of critiquing him, because he deserves to be critiqued.
If he's deservedly not. So.
Correct. But, like, people were throwing him out automatically, like, oh, contract was bad, what a bad decision, he's cooked. And I'm like, no, Nick Castellanos is too good of a hitter, he is too professional of a hitter to just fall off a cliff like this. Last year he hit 34 homers, the year before that I think he hit 16 in that shortened season. Like, he is a very good hitter, he's a very good power hitter. It's just going to take one little thing to get him back on track, and maybe that home run against the Atlanta Braves, the big two-run homer late in that game, maybe that was the thing to get him back on track. Maybe that home run last night was another way to get him back on track. Hitters like that just need one little thing, and I think we got it from Nick Castellanos.
Sometimes that's all it takes, man. Sometimes all it takes is a foot placement. Sometimes all it takes is moving your hands a quarter inch up. Sometimes all it takes is a bloop and a blast. And you know, sometimes it's statistical, sometimes it's mechanics, whatever it is. You're right. Sometimes all it takes is that one little spark to get you going. And again, I'm not asking for him to hit 412 over the course of, you know, every 17 at bat clip, and I'm not asking him to hit 387 over every 31 at bat clip. But if he could be at a 280, 290 average for the rest of the year, his average will raise from somewhere to, you know, in the mid-260s, maybe you get to the high 260s by the end of the season. If he's getting on base, if he's got gap-to-gap power, the home runs will come. Because, again, he's going to have to see pitches. He's going to have to get, you know, especially when he puts himself in hitter's counts, by not going after those down-and-away sliders and the change-ups down and in and things like that, where he's not chasing. And, again, not, I've used the term flailing before, but that's what some of his at-bats looked like at the middle portion of the season.
They weren't professional at-bats for the majority of the season. From Nick Castellanos. They weren't.
I mean, you take those pitches, you go up there without a bat, you're going to generate a lot of walks. I mean, granted, of course, that's just theoretical because, of you know, at some point they're going to change their approach. But you're right, they weren't professional at-bat, or they didn't feel like it. Recently, the at-bats have been much purer. And that's, again, small sample size, but the right step in the right direction. And you get this guy to be your 5 or 6 hitter come playoff time with a healthy Bryce Harper, with a Kyle Schwarber who continues to muscle up baseballs out of the yard, with a surging Alec Bohm. All of these things are pointing up in the right direction for the Phillies to a point where the only guy in the lineup that I don't feel, or the only two guys, I guess, in the lineup that I don't feel ultimately comfortable, JT Realmuto playing better as well, that I wouldn't feel ultimately comfortable heading down the stretch with, would be Marsh and Stott, and that's your 8 and 9 hitters. You can figure that out from there. That's appealing to me.
A ton of potential too. Like, we've seen some hot stretches from a Bryson Stott. Brandon Marsh, you know, there's obviously things to work on with the swing, and that's all we've been talking about since the trade was made. But there's still potential there. This is a guy who was a top 20 prospect just a couple years ago. Charlie Manuel on with Anthony and Chunis yesterday says he likes to swing a lot. He's got some power. They just need to work on a few things. If that's your 8 and 9 hitter, Tyler, you can do a lot worse.
You can do a lot worse. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. So that's where we begin today's show. Nick Castellanos looks like he's turning a corner. What is your confidence level in Nick Castellanos continuing, not at the level that he's hitting the baseball, of course, but to continue to turn the corner and be a trusted bat in the middle portions of the lineup, you know, the middle third of the lineup, as the season progresses and as the season unfolds and they get a little bit closer towards the end of the season into the playoffs? One of the other things that I want to get into today Last night, obviously, Kyle Gibson was very, very strong. Kyle Gibson was sharp, obviously, perfect game through six innings. Gave up had the hit-by-pitch, hit Victor Robles, there goes the perfect game. Next batter, line drive, base hit, there goes the no-hitter. But we have this conversation every so often, and I continue to have to bring it up because I continue to see social media, and I hear people talk about it on these airwaves, and I hear, you know, just conversations in passing in person. The superstition thing is very strange to me. And I don't mean when you're playing. When you are actually on the field or on the court or on the ice or wherever, whatever venue that your sport relies on, and you are actually playing that game, that match, whatever it is, everybody's superstitious to that point. I had a very specific way in which I put my uniform on every single game. It was just one of the things that I did. I had a very specific way in which I started batting practice. It was a very specific way, an order in which I stretched before I got ready to throw. I get all of that when you're actually on the field. But I'm talking about the superstitious thing from the fan base. The conversation of, well, the broadcaster's jinx is it's going to blow the perfect game. They just mentioned the perfect game, and I guess here we go. You know, Kyle Gibson's going to give up the perfect game in the no-hitter in the next inning. Two things here. One, from a fan base perspective, you have no impact on the game when you are watching the game at home from a superstition standpoint. You have impact on the game, let's say a football game, for example, at Lincoln Financial Field. Yes, you absolutely have impact on the game when you're loud and you're rowdy and the opposing quarterback can't hear the snap count and a false start gets called or a delay game gets called or they can't hear the huddle and they have to go to hand signals. You are 100% a part of the game then. What I mean is, when you're talking about the game, when you and I are at the bar, Tom, you and I are having the conversations here, or you're hanging out with your friends and you're watching the game on the TV, and you go, oh, Kyle Gibson's got a perfect game through four, and all your buddies go, shh, don't say that. You have no impact on the game. Zero impact on the game for that nature. And neither do the broadcasters. Because here's the reality of the situation. The broadcaster's responsibility is to tell the story of the game as it unfolds. And if the story of the game is a perfect game like it was last night, that's literally storyline number one, two, and three. It is the only thing that matters in the scope of the game, especially in a game that was 6-0 like it was at the time when it was first mentioned. When you have, what was it, four home runs in the first two innings, that's not an offensive battle, right? It's not a pitcher's duel here. It is the broadcaster's responsibility to bring up the storyline, the main storyline, which was the perfect game at the time. So you're not jinxing anything. Neither are the broadcasters. And I don't get the, like, hush-hush nature of a fan talking about a perfect game. I get it if you don't want to get in your teammate's head. If you're playing the game, you don't want to get in your pitcher's head. They know, but you don't want to bring it up in person. I get all that. But as a fan, and the broadcasters, as you're watching the broadcast, I am tired of hearing, oh, the broadcasters brought it up. They shouldn't have done it. They shouldn't have done that. Now Kyle Gibson's going to give up the perfect game. As if Kyle Gibson can hear them 25 stories up, 25 rows up, or whatever it is, wherever the press box happens to be. So I am not a proponent of the superstition or the jinx or anything like that as a fan. But I know that a lot of people are. So I want to two parts to this question. First, do you disagree with me when it comes to discussing the perfect game as it exists? Or discussing, you know, a big moment that seems like taboo to talk about while the game is going on? Do you discuss it as a fan? And why? And if not, why do you have a problem with the broadcasters discussing it as well? The second thing that I want to get into is I know that I'm probably not in the majority when it comes to feeling like there are superstitious natures as a fan. If you're a fan who believes that you have superstitious tendencies when it comes to watching a game, as a fan, what are your superstitious tendencies? Do you sit on the same side of the couch every time? you wear the same jersey, you drink the same beer, you go to the same place, you're with the same people. What are your sports watching superstition tendencies? I have none because I don't believe in them. But I'd love to know what yours are. I'm going to hear from Tom on the other side as well. 610-632-0975. We're just getting started here as we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. We are here until 3 o'clock. It's Tom Alvord. It's Tyler Zulli. We're here until 3 on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to the show, 1232 here on 97.5 The Fanatic. The number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. Tyler Zulli and Tom Alvord alongside you on the phones and wherever you may be. Hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon. Beautiful day outside, whether you're down the shore, you're at the mountains, you're hanging out at a barbecue, you got to go to a party later today. Whatever you're doing.
Intense.
I hope you make it a good day. Yeah, Tom, you've got a... I don't think you mind telling this. This is an adult step for you. Because I assume that you were telling me this during the break. You're going to a family friend or a family member or something like that?
It's a cousin.
Okay, so your cousin's their child's birthday party.
Yes,
right?
A sixth birthday party.
Oh, okay. All right. So when you were telling me, I thought you were saying it was like a 2-year-old birthday party.
No.
Because those have to. I've never been to like a 1 or 2-year-old birthday party as an adult. Those have to be miserable.
I honestly feel like I'd prefer the 1 to 2 birthday party because the kids aren't like old enough to do anything yet. They're all still babies. They're kind of just like there hanging out. But I don't know, 6 years old, you got a bunch of little 6 year olds running around. It's different from 1 year olds.
I shouldn't say miserable. I should say unnecessary.
Okay, that's
right.
Fair.
Because like
they shouldn't have birthdays is what you're saying.
No, it's not what I'm saying. There's no need for a large gathering other than for the adults in the room to have an excuse to get together and drink and party.
Correct. It's an excuse for you to get together with your old buddies and stuff like that.
Sure. But, like, so then don't call it a birthday. Like, you're using that as a guise for the reason as to why you're getting together. Just say you're getting together to drink with your friends.
Well, then we're kind of ignoring the child's birthday.
The kid's not going to remember.
You can't invite all your buddies over and be like, oh, by the way, it's Timmy's first birthday today.
Okay, right. So they say, oh, by the way, it's Timmy's first birthday. And then they go, oh, cool. Happy birthday, little guy.
When do we start drinking?
Can I have another beer?
Yes, exactly. Like,
what are you going to do? You're not going to go out there and throw the ball around with the kid, or you didn't rent a jungle gym or a slip and slide, or you know what I mean?
Like, yes, bounce house.
For a 6 year old birthday party, those are the kind of things that you might see, right? A face painting or something like that, right? So you have activities that are there, not for you as an adult, but like that go on for the kid that they can remember the party. Like if it's a 1 and 2 year old birthday party, that is literally an excuse for you to go drink.
Yes, correct. But today, unfortunately, is the 6 year old.
Okay.
And listen, it's just another way of me getting old. You know, turned 28 a couple weeks ago. Now I'm going to little kids' birthday parties, just showing face. I'm getting old, man.
That's what I was gonna say. That's why I said it's kind of an adult step or an adult act, you know, thing, right? Because you don't have kids of your own, so it's not like your kids are going to hang out with their kids.
Correct.
You are going just to be a good friend. Or a good cousin.
Yes, correct. That's
and,
it.
And there's not much for you to be like, I'm really excited to be at this party. You know what I mean? So like that's how you spend Saturdays as you get a little bit older. You're like, all right, well, I got a little Timmy's birthday party we got to go to,
yes.
So I hope they got good beer.
And that's pretty, and listen, like, I'll talk to my cousins, it'll be fine.
Listen, but I'm
like,
not trying to throw your fat
No. But everyone knows what we're talking about. There's a brewery that I want to check out, like, 10 minutes away, so it's kind of an excuse to do that as well, and that's how I drag the girlfriend along. I'm like, all right, come on, we'll go here after, I'll pay. So just another life in adulthood.
That's how you got it. That's the selling point is I'll pay.
That's how you get them, man. That's how it works.
All right, 610-632-0975. Well, I hope you have an enjoyable time, and whatever kind of alcoholic beverages they're offering you are to your favor, because otherwise it might be a long 2 hours. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. We're talking about the superstition thing, right? And I'd love to know why, as a viewer, and again, I preface this by saying, I said at the beginning of the show, you don't have an impact on the game, which is false. You do have an impact on the game as an attending fan at the ballpark. Football specifically, but hockey can get loud, basketball gets loud, baseball's a little bit different. It can get loud in spots, but it is a little bit more of a lull game, so it doesn't have that one play feel all the time. Now, one pitch might get imperative, or one at bat might be imperative, but it doesn't constantly have that one play feel like football does. With that being said, if you are viewing the game at home, I don't quite understand the superstitious mantra of not talking about a perfect game, or not talking about a streak that's going on, or a specific thing that has or has not happened in the game. You might be miles and miles and miles away from the game in which the stadium is being played. Even if you live in South Philly, you're still a little bit away from Citizens Bank Park. If that game were on the road yesterday, you'd be, you know, 100 and some, I don't know how far it is exactly to Washington. I'm going to say 100 and some miles away to Washington. You'd be 100 and some miles away from that game, and you'd have zero implication on you speaking the words perfect game. Now, before I get to Tom's thoughts on this, Graf checks in. Love chatting with Graf. He says, you can't say that you can be superstitious if you're playing the game and then say you can't be if you're only watching. Superstition doesn't care. It's all about the energy of that specific sporting event. So I followed back and I said, here's the difference. You do have an impact on the game as a player. It's a mindset that you don't want to upset. So, like, if you're playing in the game, I understand that you're in that locked-in mode, right? You're in that mindset where you don't want to mess with the balance of an individual or a team's perspective on the game. Just riff, baby, right? According to, like, Daryl Morey says, just riff. If you're watching the game at home, I could sit here and scream perfect game at the TV for 2 hours and 56 minutes or however long the game was yesterday and have zero impact on the matter.
Just you yelling perfect game?
Right, that's what I mean.
On the couch by yourself?
I'd just be screaming into the oblivion.
A little
weird,
but
yeah. My dog looks at me like I'm a crazy person.
Don't blame him.
I'd probably get a knock on the door. Excuse me, sir. We've had reports of some serious screaming going on. The same phrase over and over again. Are you okay? Yeah, bro, I'm just riffing. Leave me alone. Like,
yeah, whatever you say.
I could do whatever I want, and I don't have any impact on that game. That's the difference for me. Now, Tom, before we get to the phones, I want to get your thoughts on it. Do you differentiate the player and the fan aspect of this thing?
Oh, yeah, totally. No, because for the player, it's all about a mindset. If you've been doing something the same way since Little League, why would you stop if you continue to do it throughout your career? Why would you stop if it's something that you feel helps you or feel gets you in the right mind space or anything like that? When it comes to fan, let's be honest, like, we have no impact on the game unless we're at the stadium cheering for our team. When it comes to the perfect game thing, like, I saw it all over Twitter last night, and I'm just
all
like...
All over Twitter.
I'm like, come on. Like, if we're all in unison and the entire world is not saying perfect game, I think we may have an impact, then it might work then. But just because the announcer says it or, you know, hints at it or something like that does not mean the perfect game is going to end. They are simply doing their job. They are telling a story. Now, I do believe, like, we see it all the time in the NFL. Oh, this place kicker is 30 for his last 30 from kicking field goals on his attempts 2 seconds before he kicks it, and then he misses the field goal. Like, I think there's time and place Like, I do think that affects whatever being is above us and anything like that, the sports gods, if you will. Like, I think there's a time and place for it. And then even, like, in my personal life, like, I don't get real heavy into it. Like, my dad used to. We had to sit in the exact same spots watching Eagles games growing up. And I'm growing up, and I'm in, at the time, I'm, like, 10 years old. I'm like, this seems a little excessive. I feel like we don't need to do that. But I'll catch myself at times, like watching an Eagles game. If they're down 21-0 in the first half and I got a jersey on, I might rip the jersey off and just watch it without the jersey. Just me going back to like my roots as a kid. I'm like, all right, maybe this messes with the juju a little bit. So I'm not completely out like you, but for the most part, I do think it's kind of silly.
What are you trying to do with that? You trying to do like the B-Dubs commercial? Where they set the sprinklers off in the middle of the game, like you
the sports gods work in weird ways, my friend.
The sports gods don't exist.
You don't know that.
Well, I don't know that. That's true.
That's exactly.
I don't know that. But what I'm saying is, there's not a seismic grab, like a cosmic, I should say,
yes.
Not seismic, a cosmic grab on the game, and to say that, there's higher.
Beings.
Like higher, specifically targeting sports games. That's what I mean.
Listen,
like,
I'm not trying to get too deep here.
Right,
I'm just
right. I'm not trying to go. I'm not trying to take away anybody's, beliefs or things like that. I'm talking about specifically targeting a sporting event.
Sure.
In that one specific moment, because like here's the thing: when you get the guy's 30 for 30 and he hasn't missed from inside 40 since 2007. And he's been kicking for 47 years now, right?
It's a long career.
Yeah, it's a great career as a kicker. But if you get to that point, it's a law of averages thing. At some point, the guy's going to miss the kick. At some point, the guy's going to hit into his first double play in 311 at-bats. At some point, the lefty's going to give up a home run to a lefty for the first time since the summer of 2019. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, we can say those things after the play happens. I don't need to hear when there's a man on first and second. This guy hasn't grounded into a double play in 1,000 at-bats, and then he grounds into one. If you want to say it after, that's fine. Or bring it up earlier in the game, that's fine. After the kick is made or missed. Ah, that was the first time he missed the kick from inside 40 in 10 years. But when you do it right before, feels like you're testing something. And when it comes to the super, like I said, I don't get too crazy into it. I think it's a way to kind of like revert back to your childhood or like a good time in your life watching sports, a fun time. Like I used to have fun watching sports with my dad, and I still do when, big games come around, we still do. So little superstition things like that, it's just an excuse to enjoy being a sports fan for a moment, which is something you can't do apparently.
I think you're putting way too much precedent on sitting in a seat or eating this, and I get
it's
your
a lucky seat.
I get your connectivity thing, right? I don't want to take that away from you because you guys clearly have a bond over the teams, and it's something that still fits in the landscape of you two watching games together. That's not what I'm trying to get at.
No,
what I am trying to say is it feels like you are. Grasping for something to clamor to when the inevitable happens and it goes wrong, that seems to be where the big issue that I take with it is. And I don't mean you two specifically. I mean just the...
In general.
The whole thing in general.
Yeah.
You're grasping to, see, it's that broadcaster's fault. This is all fill-in-the-blank's fault, right? This is all Joe Buck's fault. He said this. And then it came to fruition. How about instead, like I look back to the, do you remember the playoff game? It was the Vikings and the Seahawks. And I forget who the kicker was. But he missed like a legit chip shot in the cold and pushed it like
was
way,
it Blair
way,
something?
Way.
Blair.
Yeah, it was Blair. Was it Blair Walsh?
I think so, yeah.
I think it was Blair Walsh. Like, that is Joe Buck's responsibility in that moment if he's calling that game to say, Blair Walsh is 79 for 79 in his career when inside the 30-yard mark. Because as a professional kicker, you should be pretty darn close to that mark from inside 30. Like, that's give me territory. But at some point, that kicker is bound to go 79 for 80. Because that's just how things happen. It just so happened that it was on the grandest stage in a playoff moment that would have won the Vikings the game that year. That's the only thing that elevates the status. It has nothing to do with, you know, a broadcaster who has no clear care of who wins this game, or at least that they shouldn't, saying that the kicker who they're speaking about is their job to discuss the storyline is 79 for 79. Same thing can be applied for a perfect game.
You're bringing way too many facts and reasoning into this conversation. I don't like it, Tyler.
Well, if I'm nothing else, I might be an idiot, but at least I'm a researched idiot.
That's all I can ask for.
At least I have some grounded nature to my idiocy. And if that's all I take, if that's all you take away from Tyler Zoli, the talk show host throughout the career of me, then I consider that a win. Because I'm not going to please all the people all the time, and I'm not going to please some of the people all the time, and I'm not going to please all the people some of the time. I'm just shooting for a winning percentage. I'm just shooting for a winning record. And if I can get to 60-40, I'll take that as a clear-cut victory in my career. So if you want to call me the grounded idiot, so be it. 610-632-0975, the number to join the conversation. All right, back to the tangible things that actually happened on the field last night, not the superstitions that you carry off the field, but we will continue that conversation. If you are a superstitious watcher, viewer of the game, what do you do? Tom was telling us that his dad said, nope, Tommy boy, you're sitting in that seat. Don't move. Don't take your jersey off. You're not allowed to eat nachos, only wings. And you go from there.
Yes.
And you know, it's funny too. It is, I don't mean to keep harking on this. It is so funny how these superstitions begin, right? Where you go, yeah, me and my dad were watching the game one time. We were watching the Mike Vick comeback against the Giants, right, where they're down a boatload of points and they win the game. And we got, instead of ordering pizza, we got wings that day instead of getting pizza. And so now we only order wings because if we get pizza, they're going to lose.
Yes.
Like, that's how ridiculous it sounds.
But I think it's cool, though, because, like I said, it reverts back to you enjoying being a sports fan. And that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it cool, the superstition aspect of it. Oh, one time we ordered wings with my dad when we were watching the game. They came back. So now we always order wings on Sundays. It's a tradition now. I don't know. It's little things like that that makes being a sports fan so enjoyable, so much fun, that obviously you can't relate to.
I don't know. I don't know if it's, Tom, I gotta be honest. There are things that have changed me for the better as a fan and things that have changed me for the worse as a fan with this job, right? Because we do have to, we are fans first and foremost. I tell people that all the time. They say, you know, do you still root for the team? Absolutely. I still root for the team. If I were a writer, it would be different. Right, if I were a beat reporter,
correct,
it's totally different. Right, if I'm Rich Hoffman or Jim Salisbury or whomever, right, if I'm a beat reporter, then 100% I have to be objective. But in this medium, we still get to be fans, which is great, and I think it's a great connectivity piece with our listeners and our families and our friends and all of that. There are things in this job that have made me a better fan. I think they've made me a smarter fan because I look at things a little bit differently. There are things that have made me, I think, a lesser fan because I can't do those kind of things. I've never bought into the superstitious part of things, but if I did, I think it would have waned as I've progressed through this job. And if I did, I think that would be one thing that would change me as a fan for the lesser, if that's fair. I don't even know if that's the proper way to put it, but I think that there are things that have changed in my mind with this job and with this industry as a fan, and that's probably one of those things that would have changed if I was a superstitious person to begin with. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. It does. I mean, there's certain, yeah, because it changes you a little bit. You have to think and watch things more reasonably. You have to break things down different ways. You have to look at everything involved. But the best part about this job, and as you mentioned, we can still be the sports fan that we grew up being, that made us fall in love with these sports teams, you know, that got us in the position where we are today. So it is a very unique and interesting job, an enjoyable job, obviously. But you're right. There is certain situations where you know, we're looking at things differently when it comes to these sports teams.
So
and
Jordan,
have a different mindset.
Jordan Tracy checks him on Twitter. Says he's a strong believer in the reverse jinx. Now, I love the reverse jinx, and I say that in, not in mockery, but in kind of in jest. Because I have a group of friends that do the reverse jinx, and it seems like it works for them. They love the, this guy sucks, he hasn't gotten a hit in 17 years, and in reality he's like, you know, 0 for 12. But it feels that way. Or this guy never pitches well against the Braves, and then he throws a shutout. But they always say, we used our powers for good, right? Our one superpower is the reverse jinx.
Okay.
And I find the reverse jinx funny. Because you are openly, like, bad-mouthing your team, hoping for a positive outcome. That is such a Philadelphia mindset. It really is like a total Philadelphia fan mindset. It's like, well, if I expect the worst, I'll be positively, pleasantly surprised. I think that's hysterical.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. Absolutely.
Now, does it apply for you the way that the superstitions does?
What, the reverse jinx?
The reverse jinx.
Yeah, I don't use that one as much. But hey, if any little thing I think is going to help this team, you out there watching think is going to help this team, then what's the harm? There's no harm in doing it.
No, there's no harm in it. You're not being a... I always tell people, right? I've said this for a long time. If there is something that you do, that you enjoy doing, something that you, you know, whatever makes you happy, whether as long as you are not infringing upon yourself or others, right, in a harmful manner, whatever makes you happy, just do it. Go ahead and do it. Like, life is tough. Life stinks. Do what makes you happy. As long as you're not infringing upon yourself or others. I am not going to sit here and tell you you're crazy. I just don't buy into it. It's just something that I can't find myself buying into. That's the only difference. 610-632-0975. All right, on the other side, we'll get back to the tangible side of things that happened last night, including a very, very strong outing, perfect game or not, superstitions or not, from Kyle Gibson. If the Phillies make the playoffs and everything goes to plan where you're able to front-load your rotation at the beginning of a series, meaning Zach Wheeler starts game one, Aaron Nola starts game two, who would you have pitch game three? Also, we're going to get into the Eagles in the 1 o'clock hour as well. I want to talk about players on the roster that we are overvaluing this year, players on the roster that we are undervaluing this year. We're going to do a little overrated, underrated throughout the NFL. I'll give you a team. You give me a player that's overrated and a player that's underrated on that roster. Also, we're going to get into, do the Eagles need another running back? The running back room is always fluid. It's always changing. Do they need another one? 610-632-0975. Tom Alvord back at our Balakinwood studios. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until 3. Broadcasting live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.